Welcome. I am delighted to share with you self-awareness, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual through new thought, exploring relationships, health and healing, true prosperity, and metaphysics. These topics embrace transpersonal psychology, realizing that we are more than bodies, minds, inherited tendencies, genes, conditioning, or programming. Transpersonal psychology goes beyond the persona, meaning going beyond. We are spiritual beings going through a human experience. The topics were recorded in front of a live audience at the Victoria Center for Self-Awareness, where I was the founder, then the director, for 25 years.
Thank you. My topic this morning is, how do we show up? And I especially want to acknowledge Reverend Wendy Craig Purcell, Unity Minister in the States in California. She wrote a great book called Ask Yourself This, and that was one of her questions. How do we show up? Now, when I was thinking of this, I thought I especially wanted to address, how do we show up in relationship? How do we show up in our everyday life? So three things I want to address. Number one, how do we show up when a no comes to us? That there's a no. Ain't going to happen, or just no. Do we respond or do we react? And I'll return to that in a moment. Number two, how do we respond? How do we show up, rather, in life? Do we show up like a criticism? Like a judgment? And I'm not only speaking of now when we're like saying those kinds of things, but in our mind, do we listen to what our self-talk is? How do we show up in our mind? What yardstick do we use, especially when we're tending to be critical or judgmental? And number three, how do we show up in relationship like this? Do we really, as I mentioned in the meditation, give others space and room to grow and to change? Do we give ourselves that space also? So in New Thought, we know that it's emotionally and psychologically healthy for us to ask for what we want. The Bible says, you ask not because you have not. Ken Keyes Jr., who was a really good author years ago, he's passed away now, he wrote a book called The Prescription for Happiness. And he has said what I have said from here at the front of the room. Ask for what you want, but don't necessarily demand it. Don't necessarily demand it. There's a distinction between asking and demanding. So how are we in our life when we get a no? Do we react? Do we respond? How we are with that says a lot about our spiritual and emotional maturity and our emotional intelligence. I was reading a story about Babe Ruth. I really like baseball. I don't watch it, but I used to play a lot of it in school. But Babe Ruth was a baseball legend many years ago. He had 714 home runs in the course of his lifetime. And one of the stories that are told about him toward the end of his career, there was a particular game where he wasn't playing well at all, largely because of some errors that he made while being out in the outfield. The other team scored 5 runs. He was actually told to leave the field, and as he was headed toward the dugout, the great Babe was booed. See, there were people there with an expectation, went into criticism and judgment. They got a no. What was the no? He didn't show up the way they had expected him to. In the middle of the booing, a young boy jumped the fence, ran into the field, into the dugout, and he grabbed Babe Ruth around the leg and hugged him, and he said, "I still love you." And he patted Babe Ruth, patted him on the head and gave him a hug. And the entire stadium grew silent. The crowd really saw two heroes. The little boy hadn't thought that he had a bad game. Still loved him. And despite a very public and humiliating no, Babe Ruth showed up with class. With class. I like that story. So the question could be, do we hold others hostage to their past? Whether they're always excelling, and then all of a sudden something different shows up, or to their past of mistakes, or maybe some of their failures, what we would hold as failures, maybe not the other person doesn't hold them as such. I think it's especially important if somebody was candidating for a position, or if somebody was evaluating a candidate for a leadership position, to include something, some kind of a query in there that would let them know how this candidate would show up if something happened or some people didn't exactly show up the way they expected them to show up. So how would they show up? Would they react or respond? Howard Martin, the executive vice president of the Institute of Heart Math, said this, I'm quoting, "Regulating emotions is the next frontier for human evolution." Regulating our emotions. And Wendy in her book says it reveals some edges of our personal frontiers. I like the way she languaged that. So what would be some everyday average things of how, you know, when we get a no, maybe you or your significant other or a friend have decided you want to go to a movie and you want to see something and they want to see something else. So there's like a no that shows up. Maybe you make a suggestion for a vacation and no, I don't want to go there this year with the person you usually go with. What about just something like we can't get a refund without a receipt? You know, I remembered I brought a rotten pineapple back to a grocery store one time, and I said, I bought this last week, and it you know, it's no good inside. And the produce manager said, do you have your receipt? And I thought, I throw away my receipt as soon as I get home. I said, no. Too bad. Now, there's another grocery store that I know, even if I didn't have a receipt, they would give me a new pineapple or whatever. But how are we when little things like that show up? Perhaps in your work or your spiritual community or your or wherever, you may belong to some clubs or some organizations, your idea is rejected. So it's like a no. Like, how do you show up? I remember when John and I were talking about getting married, and he lived in Fairfield, and I lived in a townhouse in Sydney, and he said, I really like downtown. And I said, I don't like downtown. I don't want to live downtown. Okay. So then we started talking about, so what is it about downtown? And him being in Fairfield, he was like two blocks away from Cook Street Village, which very nice place. And he said, well, I really like that I can walk someplace and kind of people watch and go for a drink or meet somebody for coffee or tea or lunch or dinner. So we put that on our, we had a whole list of what we envisioned for a home that we wanted to attract and buy together. So we added that to that. Now, that's about the only thing that didn't come 100% up to his expectation. But where we live, we are in walking distance to the Roost. And it's a great place. And they don't have dinner all the time, but they have breakfast and lunch, and we can meet somebody there, etc. We were really disappointed when the Dunsmuir Lodge closed because we're walking distance to Dunsmuir Lodge. But there was, you know, there was a... He was really, he didn't react to it. He responded, and we started to talk about, so what, you know, what would work. John had 102 wall hangings in his home. And I think I had about 20. So, you know, I kind of watched him as you know, I said, so what are we going to do with all these wall hangings? And for those of you that have been in our home, you know there's not a lot of walls. There's a lot of windows. So what we did was we lined up all his pictures and hangings, and we both walked up to each one and said, yes, no, or maybe. And, you know, he was fine with that. And there's a few hanging that aren't my favorite, but I'm fine with it too. I mean, he really likes them. But it's like, how do we show up with it? We decided not to go to Edmonton this year, and, you know, all my family's in Alberta. And I was telling him the other day, I said, you know, I'm kind of feeling not great about that. And he said, well, you know, you could hop on a plane and go anytime, and I'd rather go with him. And then I started to think, well, my oldest stepdaughter and her daughter is going to be here on May 23rd because they were going to come to the expo, and one of my other sons is coming, and another son, he's going to come sometime. So, you know, I kind of mellowed over that, and I'm okay now that we're not going to Edmonton. But, like, that's a really good thing for us to look at. How do we show up when it doesn't look like it's going to happen? I remember a friend of mine when I was in Edmonton, when I was letting people know that I had somebody new in my life, and then as the things progressed and we got engaged and we were planning to get married, and she said she was so jealous. She says, I've been demanding of God that I want a man in my life. Like, she gets a hissy fit. So, you know, when you get a hissy fit and react like that, it's for sure not going to show up. And how are you showing up when things don't happen exactly the way you're saying you really, really want them to? I'm spending a lot of time on this because I think it's really important, because we, you know, like we always say, the universe always says yes, you know, and then sometimes things happen that, you know, it looks like it's not going to turn out exactly the way we thought. So how we respond to a no reveals how much you've grown and how much yet we need to grow. So a question would also be, am I trying to change anyone? Because there's a background, a self-talk of a no, isn't there? Like, this person shouldn't be like this. This person should be this way, like that, you know? So are we trying to change anyone? Who are we trying to change? Are we trying to change our significant other? Someone we say we love? Our neighbor? What we call a judgmental relative in our term? And then sometimes we say, well, it's because I love them. We rationalize it. We kind of think in our minds, well, if only they would, and you fit it in. If only they would meditate. If only they would exercise. If only they would diet. If only they would release some weight. Then they'd be better off. So we rationalize it, thinking, well, it's only for their own good. And of course, we can't change other people. People don't change because we want them to. They change because they want to. A person that could be or is convinced against his or her will is a person of the former opinion still. It's been said. So, many times we try to make other people like us, not like us, like love us, but be like us, instead of learning to accept them and enjoy them, and realize that there's diversity, exactly like Paul was singing in one of his songs. Lasting personal change happens only when the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of changing. And who decides that? You can't decide that for another person. They need to decide it for themselves. So, you know, all this is really, really tied into judgment and criticism. So I said a little earlier, what is the yardstick that we use when we're thinking in our mind? Now remember, no one likes to be another person's project. No one likes that. So even with years of practice on the spiritual path, it can still be hard not to try to make other people our project. So just remember, you know, people don't like that. I was hearing a story about two Irish laborers. They were doing some work outside a house of prostitution. And soon the local Protestant minister came along, put down his hat, and walked into the building. And in shock, Patrick said to Danny, "Did you see who went in there?" I don't have the accent, by the way. "What did you expect? He's a Protestant, isn't he?" Yes. A short while later, a rabbi arrived on the scene. He took off his hat, whatever they call it, pulled his collar up, and walked in too. And Patrick turned to Danny again and said, "What a shocking example for a religious leader to give to people. Finally, who should come by but a Catholic priest?" He drew up his cloak around his head and slipped into the building. Patrick turned to Danny once again and said, "Oh, Danny, 'tis a terrible thing, isn't it, when one of the girls are sick and need prayer?" Now see, same situation but different interpretations. So sometimes we're like that too. We may have different ideas and definitions about what is beautiful, about values, about what is the right religion, about sexual orientation, about different races, something about like body piercing. I noticed the tragedy of this girl that was found on the Galloping Goose. Actually, our cleaning lady's best friend is the mother of this girl. And they were interviewing people on Czech TV the other day, and I noticed there was a young boy there speaking about her. And I noticed where I went. I went into judgment when I looked at him because he had things all over, you know. And I just caught myself. And I thought, listen to what he is saying. Don't go in your mind, in your ego, in your what you think is right and what looks right and like that. So it's really to catch ourselves. Maybe style, it may be fashion. I notice I just go like this when I see teenagers wearing jeans that are all patched up and holy. And when I see them in the clothing store and they're asking $55 a pair, I go nuts in my head. But it's like, okay, so where am I with this? Yeah, Mother Teresa said, if you judge people, you have no time to love them. That's very true. So admitting all this takes spiritual maturity. It's not that your mind won't go there. That's part of being human being and mind and ego. But it's what you do with it when you catch yourself. And overcoming that takes spiritual discipline. All right. Then there's such a thing as like this. How do we show up? Other people act a certain way, and you kind of in your head you may say, well, that's not right, that's terrible, they're ugly. And when we're that way, we just say, well, it's nervousness on our part. When somebody else is set in their ways, we may say, well, they're so obstinate. But when we're that way, we just say, well, we have a firmness about us. If the other people don't like your friends, you might say you're prejudiced. They're prejudiced. But if you don't like other people's friends, you probably might say, well, I just have very good judgment. See? Sometimes we may look at somebody and say, well, they're too accommodating and they're always apple polishing. But when you do it, you might say, I'm just using some tact. Sometimes when people take too much time to do things, they're really dead slow. But when you're that way, you might say, well, I'm just a very deliberate person. Sometimes when people pick flaws, you may say that they're critical and cranky. And when we are that way, we might say, well, we're just discriminating and discerning. You see, so just, you know, watch the kind of labels that we put on different things that are happening. Good question for us to ask is, do I know the whole picture? Do I know the whole picture? And what Byron Katie says in her The Work, is this, you know, in our head what's going on, or maybe even what we've said? So is that true? Do we absolutely know that it's true? And then she talks about a little turnaround. I did a whole topic on this once a couple of years ago when her little booklet came out. How would I be if I turned that statement around? How would I be? Good, good questions. So ask ourselves, do we know the whole picture instead of just jumping to a conclusion? I said in the meditation, you know, many times I've said, look deeper, look deeper. Like, you know, look wider. Look farther and look deeper and enlarge our perception about the context and about our priorities. Mm-hmm. I shared with you this story a while ago in another context, in another topic, but I thought it bore repeating. Joshua Bell is a world-renowned violinist. He's said to be the best in the world. And the Washington Post did a little survey in January 2009 in the middle of the morning rush hour in Washington's Metro Plaza. They had him playing the violin. Now, he was playing on a 1710 Stradivarius violin worth $3.5 million. And he was playing. Now, this is what happened. 1,097 people passed by, most of them on their way, rushing to work. 3 minutes went by before anything happened, and then a middle-aged male passerby slowed his pace to listen for a moment and to see where the music was coming from. Another couple of minutes passed by before he got his first donation. A dollar bill was thrown into the open violin case by a woman who continued to walk by. It wasn't until 6 minutes into his performance that someone actually stopped for a few moments and really listened to the exquisite music. In the end, only 7 people stopped what they were doing to listen for a moment or two. What was in his open violin was $32.17 given by 27 people, including the $20 bill that the one person gave who stopped and listened to him. Now, the question is, do we in our busyness, you know, the old saying, stop to smell the roses, you know, when we hear some lovely music, do we stop and listen? Or are we just like, you know, like too busy? How do we show up in life? Are we engaged in the hurry sickness? Or I'm busy. I don't have time. I don't have time for this right now. Like that. Do we show up as critical or judgmental? How do we show up? So, do we give others room to grow and to change? Now, here's the thing. I mean, here in New Thought, we remind you again and again and again who you really are as a spiritual being going through a human experience. Remind you again and again and again that we are all immersed in that infinite presence and power. It is our very life. It resides in us. We we live in it. But so many people hide it, ignore it, cover it up, or try to numb it out. How do we hold relationships? Is a relationship a place to give, or is a relationship a place to get? Is a relationship a place for us to expand our love and give our love and enclose the people in our love? Or are we in relationship to get love? Good question to ask. Now remember, last month's topic was love, and reminder that we are immersed in love. Who we are intrinsically is love at the core. So it's not something we can get or can lose. Ask yourself if your consciousness is a safe place for people to walk through the corridors of your mind. I want to tell you another story. John D. Rockefeller, when he was the CEO of Standard Oil, one of his executives made a colossal mistake, some of it costing the company more than $2 million. That day, no one wanted to have anything to do with Rockefeller because of his temper. Everyone kept their distance except for one executive who absolutely had to meet Rockefeller that day. Though he wasn't the one that made the costly error, he was nonetheless prepared to be the target of considerable misdirected anger. When he entered Rockefeller's office, he saw him at his desk scribbling furiously on a piece of paper. He looked up and said, "I suppose you've heard the bad news." And the executive said, "Yes, I know. We've just lost $2 million. I guess you're going to fire him." "Fire him?" said Rockefeller. "Definitely not. We just invested $2 million in his education." Wow, what a context. What a way to show up. "And I've been sitting here all morning reminding myself of his good qualities and the times that he's done well and saved the company money." So we're not Rockefeller, maybe we're not a CEO of a multi-million dollar organization. But again, how do we hold people? Do we hold them hostage to their past, especially if they've made mistakes? Now, there was another quotation from HeartMath, a great institute. HeartMath research has shown that an electromagnetic field is produced through the heart that can be detected as much as 5 feet away from an individual. Wow. So what are we emanating from our heart? Like, how do we show up in life? Do we show up remembering who we are and remembering who other people are and what we're about in this world? Do we come from the context that the family of humanity, that humankind is intrinsically divine? Or do we come from the context that they're intrinsically flawed? A worm in the dust. Now, here's the thing. Don't jump in uninvited. But if and when people say, "I could use some help, I'd like your opinion, I'd like to make a change, I'd like to grow in this area, can we talk about certain things?" Some people may even be holding you as their mentor. Maybe they wouldn't say that, but maybe they look up to you. I always remember, it's been used in different contexts, but I remember I was at a New Thought conference and somebody said, "I want to ask yourself a question. Do you express and experience enough of New Thought in your life in order to convict you of being a New Thought?" Or I thought, that was an interesting question. No? It's a good question for us to ask ourselves. So as you go through life today, and as you prepare for Easter, I hope that Easter time for you is going to be more than, and for the children in your life and your grandchildren or your nieces and nephews or whatever, that it'll be more than chocolate Easter bunnies, Easter eggs, an Easter egg hunt, dressing up in real pretty and fancy clothes, and maybe getting together and having a really good meal. And it could include that. But I hope that it's more than that. I hope that it's about resurrecting your life, showing up in a new way. Next week I'm going to be speaking about showing up, radiating a renewed life, a renewed life. So ask yourself that question in the next week and before you come for Easter. How could I be? What could I shift? How could I be different? What could I change? Who could I speak to in a different way? Who could I maybe speak to that I have never spoken to before? So that I could have a renewed life. We were spending some time downtown the other days. We got a wonderful gift of an overnight in the Empress Hotel. So John and I went to see a movie and went out for dinner and spent the night at the Empress. And I don't walk around downtown very much. I hardly ever go downtown. And I'm just amazed at how many people are just sitting, you know, with their hats out or just sitting there. And you know what I realized? It was really in my mind, my topic, how do I show up? And John and I were kind of talking about that as we were driving in. And I thought, how do I show up in front of these people? Now, part of my tithing goes to Our Place. When I think of the life that I have, and I look at these people, before, I used to not look at them. I used to, look straight ahead. And what I noticed on Saturday when I was downtown, I looked at them and I smiled at them and I nodded to them. Do you know what? Every one of them smiled back to me. Now, how do we show up in life? Good question to ask ourselves. Thank you for presencing yourself this morning. God within me acknowledges and salutes God's presence and power in and through and as your life. Namaste. Thank you. Ah.